Welcome to the Litigation Finance Podcast. I'm your host, John Freund. This podcast is brought to you by the Litigation Finance Journal, the only dedicated news source to the litigation finance industry. Please visit www.litigationfinancejournal.com. Our guest today is Charles Agee of Westfleet Advisors. Westfleet acts as a broker and advisor to claimants and law firms seeking to secure litigation funding. Just a few weeks ago, Westfleet released the Litigation Finance Buyer's Guide, a study resulting from, and I quote, the first ever detailed analysis of the U.S. commercial litigation finance industry. Charles, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, John. Good to be with you.
Okay, so let's start with the methodology for this study. How did you collect and aggregate the data?
Sure. So this was, you know, first of all, our goal here was to come up with with a reasonably accurate measurement of transaction volume in the U.S. commercial litigation finance market. From my standpoint, and I know there have been other attempts to do this in the past, but I felt like from the get-go, the bedrock of such an effort really had to be data collected directly from the funders themselves. And so we designed the entire data collection effort with what we anticipated funders' sensitivities would be around, you know, sharing proprietary information, sharing information that could be deemed confidential or might in some way run afoul of the NDAs that they have in place with their funded counterparties, et cetera, et cetera. So, in other words, we knew that this was going to be an undertaking that was going to get at some sensitive information that the funders would be closely guarding. And so we designed the data collection approach to really take into account every foreseeable legitimate concern that any funder could have about participating. So the way we set it up was, first of all, none of the data was provided directly to Westfleet. We knew that just given our position in the market, even though we're not competitive with funders, we knew that they wouldn't be crazy about the idea of us having direct access to their deal flow data. So we hired an accounting firm to serve as, you know, for lack of a better term, like a data collection agent or a data escrow agent, whose role in this process was to serve as the recipient of the data that the funders provided based on a request or a questionnaire that we designed. So the data collection agent, the accounting firm, would take the submissions in from all the funders who elected to participate. They would aggregate the data, anonymize it, and then download us a data set that had been so anonymized so that we wouldn't have access or be privy to any individual funders' deal flow, and certainly no knowledge about any individual transaction, which would serve to protect the identity of funded parties, anyone knowing the nature of funded matters or could identify a party in the case, et cetera. Basically, we did everything we could do to encourage funders to participate and to address any legitimate concerns anyone could have about protecting their confidential information.
So one of the key findings from your study is the $9.5 billion figure. That's how much AUM is dedicated to U.S. investments. But you found that only $2.3 billion of that AUM has been committed to investments in the past year. That's the trailing 12 months. So you also suggest anecdotal evidence in this buyer's guide of deployment pressure on funders. So can you elaborate a little bit more about the oversupply of capital? How did that come to be? Who's feeling the pinch? And how do you think it'll play itself out?
Sure. So, you know, as I think the...
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to take a look at the 2020 version of this report to see if that 30% number increases or not. One other thing I noticed in looking at the report was the investment minimums. So I noticed a lot of $500,000 and under minimums, in some cases no minimums, in some cases, you know, $50,000, $100,000, or maybe $500,000. I keep hearing how small case funding is a tough nut to crack in terms of profitability, yet based on your report, it seems like a lot of funders, a good chunk of them, are open to funding small cases. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on this.
Now, I think your instincts are right. I think the small case end of the market is a tough nut to crack. There are some funders, you know, take for example Legalist. They make no secret about the fact that they see participating at that end of the market as a relatively competition-free place to play, and I think they're right. I think there are a handful of funders that are looking to do those smaller, mid six-figure deal sizes. Most are not. But for the reasons you point out, it's difficult to figure out the underwriting efficiencies there. And I think to the extent funders put no minimum or no stated minimum, was probably just a reflection of the fact that they're not going to turn down it's possible, at least theoretically possible, that a large funder might fund a small investment if the economics are otherwise compelling. So maybe they just didn't want to run potential prospective counterparties off by stating some hard absolute minimum. I don't know, but I can tell you in trying to get deals done and actually presenting opportunities to funders, it is the market for small deals is definitely very thin, and there are a handful of firms that will accommodate those or even specialize in those, but it is not. It's not anywhere close to a majority.
Got you. So funders are open to small case funding, but it's not their bread and butter. That makes sense. I noticed that you have already received some pushback from the industry on some of your findings, in particular that 30% figure. There was some quibbling about that from some of the industry players. What do you say to funders who might decry an image of their industry as one that is under deployment pressure, where there's a heavy dose of supply and not enough demand, and that mostly they're doing business with some of the smaller mid-sized law firms as opposed to the larger Am Law 200 shops?
Well, I would just say that, again, any given funder knows exactly what their pressures are or aren't, and they know exactly where their capital's going. I don't believe that they know much about what their competitors are doing, though. And that's the point of an effort like the one we undertook, is to really describe what's going on across the industry, not just in one particular funder silo. And I think that to the extent anyone is in favor of transparency and is in favor of more accurate industry information, by all means, they ought to participate in efforts like this that are intended to try to get to the answer and to try to put out some reliable, objective facts about the industry.
Yeah, and that leads into my final question, which is about Westfleet's role as an advisor to the litigation finance industry. We've interviewed a number of broker advisors at this point, and they're a growing component of this industry, which I think really signals the maturation of the litigation finance industry. So can you speak to your company's role? How do you position yourself vis-a-vis law firms, claimants, funders? And do you think something like the Litigation Finance Buyer's Guide, does that speak to your role? Is that a part of your role in this industry going forward?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is a part of our role in the industry. I mean, one of the reasons I founded this business 6 years ago is, I came into this from a role on the funder side of the industry. So, it's very interesting and very important to me to shine some light on this industry, to make it more approachable, make it more user friendly. I'm a big believer that. I think potential recipients of funding, whether that's, law firms or companies that have litigation, are more likely to enter the market if they can feel comfortable with it. And I think one of the ways they can feel comfortable with it is to be able to approach it with some reasonable amount of transparency. And so that's what my firm is all about. I mean, we're definitely, our there's no confusion about who our clients are. Our clients are not the funders or their investors, although we have great working relationships with the funders. We appreciate what they do, and to some extent we rely on them, you know, being here and being in it for the long haul. I hope that we're helping them make quality investment decisions through the work that we're doing. But at the end of the day, we're here to serve our clients, law firms, companies that are potential users of litigation finance, and really facilitate their entry into the market, which, look, I think if we're successful at what we're trying to do, that just grows the pie for everybody. It means more law firms and litigants are deriving the benefits of litigation finance, and it means more deal flow, more quality deal flow for the funding community.
Yeah, everyone always talks about transparency, but usually it just takes someone making that first big leap in order to really make it a reality. So we appreciate you taking that leap and for coming on this podcast and discussing it with us. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, John.
Absolutely. And if you'd like more information on the Litigation Finance Buyer's Guide or on Westfleet Advisors in general, you can visit them at their website, www.westfleetadvisors.com. There's a link to the Buyer's Guide on the site. So thank you all for listening today. This was a great episode. We really appreciate Charles being here, and we appreciate you being here. So thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time on the Litigation Finance Podcast.